This is the Blaze Radio on demand.
Morning, good morning, and welcome to the program, the broadcasting program show. It is Friday. There's a lot to go over, and I think we should start with Michael Flynn. Has he asked for immunity, which everyone is claiming? Not exactly. The story may not be, surprise, surprise, what the press is reporting. We begin there right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. So, what is your understanding in the reading of Michael Flynn and this story, the way it's being reported?
Well, there's a couple things. I mean, he's saying, you know, the report is Michael Flynn is going to ask for / get immunity because he's, you know, got some story to tell.
And that part, the last sentence is exactly word for word what was said
by his attorney.
Yeah, he has a story to tell. So everybody is running with he's got a story to tell and he wants immunity. That's not exactly what he's asking for.
Right. So, first of all, who wouldn't want immunity? I mean, Jeffy, if you wanted to chime in on that, I'm sure you'd have something to say.
Can I tell you something? The reason why you never want to testify in front of Congress? They can take anything that they want. You are so close to going to jail when you testify in front of Congress. Because if they choose to be hostile, they have almost unlimited power on cornering you and then throwing you in jail. Because if they are hostile to you, I mean, look at how many times the Obama administration perjured themselves in front of Congress. In my documents from a recent court case, which are out in the open, you will see that we have the Department of Homeland Security chief perjuring herself in front of Congress, locked up, tight as a drum. Evidence. She perjured herself multiple times. But for some reason, the government doesn't want to go there. But if the government decides, if Congress decides, oh, you've testified in front of us, oh, you've given us some information, and they are hostile to you, look out.
And clearly they would be hostile to Flynn.
Oh, I mean,
there's no question about it. Asking for immunity is a wonderful thing you can do. They don't give you immunity because you ask for it. They give you immunity because they want to get something out of it. So the idea would be if they believe that Flynn has something on somebody bigger than him, mm-hmm. which obviously would be Donald Trump, pretty much. Or, you know, I mean, I guess maybe Bannon or somebody up at that level, but somebody very high in the administration, then they might give him immunity. They have not given him immunity, so there's no reason to believe that at this point. However, there's never a problem, you know, there's no reason not to ask for it, right? Because you're right. He gets in front of that, he starts testifying, and what are they going to do? They can ask him a million different questions. They can try to make him look really bad. They can try to put him in a position in the worst possible light. So there's no upside in not having immunity. That being said, I don't like Flynn at all. He's a
shifty, shady guy.
And I think, I think it was a terrible appointment. I think it was his worst appointment, probably, maybe second worst. And the idea that he did something potentially illegal is certainly possible.
Yeah.
So why not try for this?
Okay. So
Trump
did
tweet some support for him today.
Right.
We should point out.
And the tweet that came out today was, I would ask for immunity too if I were part of this crooked government or investigation. Pretty much.
Yeah. He said Mike Flynn should ask for immunity in that this is a witch hunt, excuse for big election loss by media and Dems of historic proportion! Exclamation point.
Oh,
and it is historic in that it did happen in the past.
Yes, but that's the only
historic
proportion.
That's the only historic proportion.
Okay, so why is he still doing this? I mean, it is really not about the election anymore. This is about your ties to Russia. It is not really about the election anymore. I mean, that is a part of it, but it is much bigger than that. Okay, so what has he said? He basically said, yeah, you know, they're crooked. I would ask for immunity too. So let me give you the way the media is spinning this. The media is spinning this. Michael Flynn and his attorney have asked for immunity. And watch this clip, and it shows the attorney. Michael Flynn has a story to tell, and he needs protection. Okay. He's going to take down Donald Trump. He's got something on Donald Trump. Now, let me tell you what really happened. Michael Flynn's attorney. Michael Flynn has a story to tell, but he wants protection from an unjust prosecution. Now, that's different, isn't it? Instead of saying, I want immunity, what was said was he wants protection in the form of immunity for unjust prosecution. Now, that leads me to believe that there's a good possibility that the story Michael Flynn has to tell has something to do with unjust prosecution, or that he's going to say, none of this stuff happened. I'm not talking to you until you give me immunity. Now, he won't get immunity if, indeed, his story is everything's great.
Yeah, you don't get immunity for everything's great or I did something myself on my own that does not affect others.
Correct.
Right? Like, you don't get immunity.
You don't
for
get
those
immunity.
Two things.
The only way they're going to give immunity is if he convinces them that I do have a bombshell and I'm going to drop it. But I personally think, remember, Donald Trump is a great showman. If nothing else, he's a great showman. And I don't think this is coordinated by any chance because that would be illegal. But wouldn't it be a great showman to be able to convince the FBI that you need immunity and you're going to give them something? And then when you go in, you give them nothing but sunshine and lollipops and they have nothing. And then your attorney walks out and says, Michael Flynn testified. He wanted immunity from an unjust prosecution, and he testified that there is nothing going on, and we demand that those statements be released for the public because he knows they granted him immunity, and he has no problem telling the truth. He told them the truth. I mean, that's just a bomb waiting to go off.
Yeah, people who think Flynn, this is real, and Flynn might say something bad about Trump, think that Trump's trying to get him on his side, essentially.
I would, too. I think Michael Flynn has something. I think Michael Flynn is a dirty, I mean, look, what was the other, not Bannon, the other?
Manafort.
Yeah. Manafort is, I don't know why Manafort isn't being burned at the stake today.
He's going to be, he's going to be a big focus of this. I think they think Flynn is actually less potent than Manafort is. I think they think they can get a lot more on Manafort when this thing actually ends than they even Flynn. But of course, of these people, Donald Trump himself, ejected from his inner circle.
I think those two are absolutely dirty. Now, whether that it goes all the way to Donald Trump or not, I don't know. But those two, I mean, we already have the evidence on Manafort from the Ukraine. I mean, the Ukraine did an investigation themselves on other things, and they found that the ruling party, the party connected with Putin, was paying him $10 million a year, basically laundered money. I mean, that's not good. And Manafort never claimed any of that.
No. This is pretty interesting, too. Michael Flynn's attorney, this is according to ABC News, Michael Flynn's attorney is Robert Kellner. Robert Kellner, 4 days after the election, tweeted this, a prediction. Donald Trump will make novel and unusual use of the president's pardon power, an underutilized tool of political power.
Oh my gosh.
Which is true because, you know, the president can do whatever he wants, basically, when it comes to pardoning people.
Oh, man, if he starts to pardon people.
You think,
oh, he pardons people.
You're telling me he won't? If you go in there and you go in there and you don't put him, don't include Donald Trump in any of these controversies, and you go and you get dragged in
you're
front of
loyal
Congress,
to him.
I would not be surprised at
I
all.
I will
if he
tell
pardons.
You the I think the people will go crazy. Now, I can't
to.
Predict.
I mean,
yeah,
in the next 10 days, they did.
I can't predict what conservatives will do because I don't know what conservative. I know what this audience is, but I don't know what the, you know, conservatives at Wild will do, because I think there is a ton of them that are convinced that this is a witch hunt. I do believe that the media is mishandling this because, A, to a conservative, all it conjures up, at least for me, every time I watch it, really? Where were you the last 8 years? They didn't do this on anything for the last 8 years. Nothing. They would report a story and say, hey, the president said that it was just a couple of rogue agents in Cincinnati that were looking at at taxes. And then that was proven to be absolutely false. And they never really covered anything. They didn't certainly cover it like this. This is nonstop. You know what this is? The missing Malaysian airliner. This is about to beat the CNN coverage of that missing airplane. They, for some reason, have their teeth in it, and they're just not going to let go.
Well, I mean, it is something that there is bipartisan support for an actual investigation into many parts of this.
Yes.
And it's not just about Donald Trump. I mean, you know, Trump keeps bringing up the leaking of this information, but that is an actual part of this and that it is bad.
Do you know that the Russian government hacked into one of the French news channels a few years ago? Do you know this story? We've got to look this story up and really tell this story start to finish. The French have been, Marine Le Pen and Le Pen Party is funded. Much of it is coming from Russia, and the ties to Dugin are well documented. So they've been trying to push this ultra-right all over the world, and they are looking for fascist wannabes or just instability. They're just looking for chaos. So they have been involved in the French nonsense for a while, trying to poison the well over in France and trying to stir up anti-Islamic hatreds. The Russians, at one point, before one of the elections, this is years ago, I've never heard of this. The Russians actually hacked in to the Russian news channel and tried to pretend that they were ISIS. And they did this whole hacking in, and it turned out that it wasn't ISIS that hacked in and took over the sites and was making threats. It was Russian operatives that were pretending to be ISIS. I just read this the other day, and I'm like, I don't know anything about that. I've never even heard of this. But it was all of the different things that Russia has done.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Marco Rubio yesterday said that not only did the Russians try to break into his campaign infrastructure during the campaign, they did it again yesterday. more attacks from Russia, from IP addresses located in Russia.
I mean, it's clearly happening, and we clearly have to know. And can we look into that French story over the weekend? Let's maybe put Jason on this and look at all of the stuff that they've been doing in France, because that's not emotional to us. You know, that stuff happened to France, and you're like, wow, really? Let's find out more. Let's really dig into what they're doing over in Europe, because if they're doing it over in Europe, and we know they are, if they're doing these things, and I can't believe I didn't hear that story. There's got to be something to that story that's wrong in the way I read it, but that's what I read. I can't believe that actually happened, because we don't know anything about it, but we are also so isolated here and we don't care about, you know, other countries' elections, that maybe we did just miss it and nobody picked it up. But we want to see the patterns over in Russia, because if they're doing them there, why would we assume they're not doing them here? We're the biggest target in the world. Of course they're doing it here. And that's, to me, I can't believe I'm saying this, but Mitt Romney was right. Russia is the biggest geopolitical foe of freedom and the United States of America.
Mitt suddenly, after the election is gone, has tons of support on that claim from Democrats. All of a sudden, now they understand it. You know, the thing is, it was true then. It was true then when he said it.
Yes.
And we all knew it was true. And you know what? They knew it was true. And they denied it all this time. They did nothing about it over those 4 years.
Right.
And then they wound up getting, they certainly got bitten by it. But now they all admit it.
Now they all admit it. But they're only admitting it because they want to get rid of Donald Trump. And
many Republicans are now denying it.
And our Republicans, we all knew that was true. And now many are denying it because they want to protect Donald Trump. Let's just deal with the truth.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
From the historic studios of Las Colinas, these studios were the old MGM studios, and it's a whole campus. And on this campus, David Barton is starting something. And we want to urge you to get your family to apply by April 5th. We have an internship program that is happening with David Barton, Wall Builders, and Mercury One. It is training, hands-on, once-in-a-lifetime experience for 18 to 25-year-olds. There are only two sessions this summer, one in June and one in July. We are opening up our library to a very select few to research the original historic documents from the collection of probably a quarter of a million documents now. And I have 8,000 pieces myself of historic items. We're looking for people who want to learn how to research things, learn how to find the truth from the original sources. There will be speakers and guest lectures over this internship. It does cost $375, and you have to provide your own transportation, lodging, and meals, and everything else. But it is 2 weeks of nonstop projects, research, and lectures focused on American history. And what we're trying to do is have these interns find and document, for instance, our founders were Christians. Okay, you're going to get that argument in college. How do you find out the truth? Join us, mercuryone.org/intern. Have to apply by April 5th. Space is limited, and we are going to be very choosy on who gets to go into these vaults. mercuryone.org/intern.
Program.
Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
If you're a longtime listener of the program, you've heard me talk about Labor of Love. This is an amazing group of people that started with us in Israel when we went over in Israel in 2011. And they were listening to the program before where I said, you know what, you've got to stop waiting for these organizations to do stuff. You got to take matters into your own hands, and you just got to go out and do it and change the world one person at a time. Well, Susan and the founding members, Dave Perkins is the other co-founder, they were on what's called Red Bus A over in Jerusalem. And all of these people became good friends, and they started to do service projects. And they won't take outside money, and they do these service projects, these labors of love, where they are trying to change hearts one person at a time. And they happen to be in Texas today and tomorrow. Susan was on with me, along with all of the other people from Labor of Love. And I want you to watch last night's TV show on The Blaze. You want to change your life and other people's lives? See the family that is Labor of Love. Susan is on the phone with me real quick just to talk about a couple of things. You're in Tyler, Texas today and tomorrow serving, right?
That's right. We are.
And can you tell me about, we had, his name was Joe, wasn't it?
His name was Joel Inge.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about who you're serving. This is an amazing story.
We're serving in two places today. This morning we'll be at Kingdom Life Academy, which is an innovative program targeting kind of at-risk youth who were at risk of dropping out of school. They needed more an experience-based, real-life experience. So this public educator, Joel, who was on your program last night, he decided that he needed to do something about that. So they started a private school. They're graduating their first students this year. But we're helping them put in a 6,000-square-foot garden today.
These kids, many of them, abandoned by their mom and their dad. They would have been long gone. One of the kids who's graduating now, and graduating not only with the school, but also graduating at the same time from a trade school. He's graduating, and he said clearly, I'd be in jail today if it wasn't for this. And what they do is they provide meals. And when I say they provide, the kids have to get up and make breakfast and lunch. They go to the store, they buy everything, have to earn the money. They grow their own vegetables and their own stuff in their own garden. I mean, this is really the school of hard knocks. And it's an amazing program. You guys found it. And so today and tomorrow, are you going to be planting the garden?
Yes, we will. We're spreading 6,000 square feet of compost in, and then we're helping them plant the garden. We're also going to be painting a home of a woman who's seen better times, and we'll see them again soon. But her home is going to be swarmed by people and painted. The roof was repaired yesterday, and that's the one-on-one part. We're bringing hope to one person there, and I've already seen her face brighten up as she's anticipating all these people. We've got about 70 people so far, even people who heard your program last night, Glenn. Got messages at midnight. There's a couple getting in their car 100 miles away from here with garden tools, and they're going to show up this morning. So
fantastic.
We're just so blessed.
That's fantastic. If you want to find out more, go to lolusa.org, lolusa.org. Or what's your Facebook address?
They can find us at Labor of Love USA on Facebook.
Okay.
And if people can't make it today, we have events that we've announced for the summer.
Yes.
We'll be in Utah in early June, in Michigan in early August, and in the northern or central Florida area in mid-October. So come on out and join us. You won't regret it.
Susan, I'd love to have you guys back on the TV show because there's so much more to talk about spreading this and having other groups just start themselves, inspiring others to start their own groups. I think, as I said on the TV show last night, when all is said and done and I'm at the I'm on the other side of the veil, I can sit there and tell the Lord about all the things that I did, and I don't think he's going to care. I think this may be one of the most important things that has happened in my life. And I had nothing to do with it. It is just me saying something on the air about how we all have to pitch in and do it ourselves. And then you guys coming up with a system to do it and doing it on your own, not taking outside money, is truly remarkable to me. And you do it because we all have to be responsible and we all have to give. I think you're an amazing group. It's lolusa.org. Thank you so much, Susan. Best of luck today.
Thank you.
And say hi to everybody for me. Please watch the show from last night on the Blaze Network. You can find it at glenbeck.com or theblaze.com.
It's very easy to find people on the web when you give them their web address
Yes.
or their Facebook page.
Yes.
That's a simple one to track down.
Uh-huh.
Who knew how easy it was to find that information if you didn't give any hints?
I know where you're going, I would say one person who didn't really know would be James Comey.
Yes, the director of the FBI,
yeah.
Who you'd think would really be on top of this.
Right,
and be very
a little
concerned.
Stunned on what has happened to him.
Yeah, and it's an amazing story, and if you want to use it to teach your kid a lesson as to how to use the internet, it is certainly worthwhile. James Comey said just this: I care deeply about privacy, treasure it. I have an Instagram account with 9 followers. Nobody's getting in. They're all immediate relatives and one daughter's serious boyfriend. I let them in because they're serious enough. I don't want anybody looking at my photos. I treasure my privacy and security on the internet. My job is public safety. So he said that. That led a reporter from Gizmodo to try to track down.
That's like a dare.
Right? It is. And that's exactly
it is. That's how they took it.
So she obviously wanted to try to find this. The only piece of information she has is obviously his name and that his Instagram account has 9 followers, specifically 9. So, and you can't search Instagram like this necessarily to try to just find everyone with 9 photos or you know.
9 followers.
9 followers. So after some trial and error, she went through and started looking at family members. Who was online at family members? Now, of course, you're James Comey's, a family member of yours. He's probably told you, please lock down your accounts, right? So they found that Brian Comey, it's his 22-year-old son, has the largest online presence because he's a basketball star at Kenyon College. Ooh, I did not know this. Of course, he's not on Twitter either because he's been told to have that locked down, certainly. But they found tweets that led to him being mentioned. One person mentioned a Twitter account that is now dead called Twitterfuzz, at Twitterfuzz. That account, if you search through its mentions, appears to have been previously owned by Brian Comey, his son. Okay. If you believe the folks on Twitter congratulating him for his dad's ascension to the head of the FBI. So okay. Again, that's not him making a mistake.
Right.
That's people he knows congratulating him for something nice in their life. Right.
By the way, this is all being done. This is all legal to do. This is just somebody, a reporter who says, I want to find this.
Yeah. Just trying
all
to find
open.
Right. Going through Twitter.
So that trail led them to a picture, a mention from the Kenyon College, the college his son goes to. Of someone teeing off, and some video of that. Click through the link through there. You find a well-wisher, again, not the person making a mistake, but a well-wisher that has left a comment in which none other than Brian Comey is tagged. Okay, again, not Brian Comey's fault. Someone else mentions him in a comment. Now, the FBI director has trained his son well, as they write on Gizmodo. His Instagram account is locked down. Instagram, however, offers a little loophole that is terrible for user privacy, but wonderfully helpful for our purposes today. Using a fake Instagram account, this reporter maintains, you ask requested access to Brian Comey's account. Okay, now this is the son's account. When you ask for access to that, it doesn't approve it because the person who has a private account has to say yes. However, it does recommend other accounts you might want to follow.
Oh,
if you're
gosh.
Interested in following Brian Comey, you might want to try X, Y, and Z.
They do that all the time, man.
Right. They always pop it up, and of course, 99% of the time, it's useful. In this situation, there's a lot of people named Patrice Comey, all the other Comey family members, and a couple of other random accounts. Suggestions were algorithmically selected based on the account I requested to follow. Among the various Comeys, only 2 of the suggested accounts lacked both real names and profile photos. And only one of these had anywhere near the 9 followers that James Comey claimed to have. The account was Reinhold Niebuhr. You guys are familiar with that name? Reinhold Niebuhr. The reporter says, I still wasn't sure what this wasn't James Comey, but a quick Google search turned up this article. On Comey's time at the College of William & Mary, by senior year, Comey was a double major.
I know who Reinhold Niebuhr is. He's the guy who is the guy who started modern police work, is he not?
No, I don't know. Here's the description. Senior year, Comey was a double major in religion and chemistry, writing a senior thesis on theologian Reinhold Niebuhr and televangelist Jerry Falwell on his way to the University of Chicago Law School. So he, because he had an interest in this person, used that fake name. He had mentioned it, I guess, once in a thesis a long time ago that they dug up. Yeah. With Instagram solved, it was time to move to Twitter. There is a Reinhold Niebuhr, but it is on Twitter, but not James Comey. There are only 7 accounts on Twitter that currently use some variation of that name. And one of them was at Project Exile 7. And that one has 27, is following 27 accounts and has only 1 follower, has never tweeted, and liked 39 tweets. But how can you be sure? The only person following this account was someone named Benjamin Witz of Lawfare. Witz is very active on Twitter, does not follow everyone that follows him, so there'd be no reason to, it was not a follow back. He's the only person following a random egg account. So why would he be doing this? Of course, as on another part of the internet, Witz had written that he is a personal friend of James Comey. So Project Exile, his name was Project Exile 7, is a name of a federal program that James Comey helped develop when he was a U.S. attorney.
Jeez.
They go all the way through this, and they go, so he follows 27 accounts. Most of them are reporters. However, William & Mary News, where Comey attended, is one of them as well. And you go through, and then at this point, you know it is his account, and you look at what he's liked, and you find almost every one of the tweets is about James Comey. things that he wanted to remember. Some of them are about the Flynn investigation, which is kind of interesting. Jared Kushner and Michael Flynn meet with Russian envoy in December, White House says, from the New York Times. That was liked by him. Mm. Goes through the whole thing, and she puts this out. The FBI says no comment, but this morning, that account, Project Exile 7, tweeted a link to at FBIjobs.gov, which if you could do this, maybe you should be working for the FBI.
Wow.
And
that's
said,
great.
I'm not even mad. I'm just impressed, basically, with a meme. So, but I mean, incredible thing. And what a lesson to learn. If someone cares to go and find your information, they can find you. And secondly, if a reporter from Gizmodo can do this with basic internet information, what can the government do with the access to information?
It's truly remarkable. We have covered our tracks as much as humanly possible in our life, just because, you know, stalkers exist, et cetera, et cetera. And you would not believe, because we've had people just show up, and you wouldn't believe how one little mistake, not even by you, but by someone else, one little mistake opens the entire Pandora box.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So we have somebody coming up in a second that I think you want to hear. Yesterday, we were talking about coming technology and how your life is just open and privacy. And Pat was talking about how we have a right to privacy. We do. The government can't violate that. But public corporations, private corporations, they violate that all the time. And you click agree every time.
Yeah.
So we have a guy who has gone through and read all of those things. You sign up for iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, whatever. You click agree. How many of us have ever read that? I haven't.
Oh,
yeah. Nobody reads
I mean,
them.
The iTunes, I think, takes you 15 solid hours to read. I mean, so nobody is reading
really?
It. Yeah.
That's got a
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
I mean, they can change any part of
crazy.
It and add anything they want and then send it to you, and then you just click agree. I mean, mm-hmm. It is really, I love these people say, read the bill. That's
it
true.
Is. Yes, it is.
That is true. So this guy has gone and he's done an analysis on what you're clicking and you're agreeing to. And it's quite a lot.
No kidding.
Quite a lot. Now, the question is there enough in there to make you say, no, I'm not going to do that?
I wonder if that would hold up in court if you really challenged it.
I know. Yeah.
I wonder if it would hold up because, you know, if you do a 15-hour set of rules, no reasonable human being can be expected to read that. So I wonder if you could make a case in court that you can't be held to that.
It would even be good if you just said, every time they changed them, if they just said, here are the rules and here's what we changed.
Right.
Just let us know what you changed. But do you even know what's in them in the first place? You're going to be amazed. That's coming up next.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Blaze Radio on demand.
This is really, this is fascinating. Yesterday we started talking about privacy. What do you have? Privacy, a guarantee of privacy. Pat doesn't like the fact and thinks the government should regulate companies like Google, et cetera, that want to sell your information. I agree with him that I don't like companies that sell information, but I don't think the government should regulate it. The companies should just ask for permission. And if you don't like that, go to another company that will ask for permission. The reason why Google and everybody else gets away with it is because nobody really cares. Because if you really cared, you most likely wouldn't click on "I agree" without reading the terms and conditions. However, reading the terms and conditions, I think it's Apple, will take you about 15 hours to actually go through and read start to finish. So what is it that you've agreed to? A guy who knows the answer to that question begins right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So, if you watch The Wonderful World of Stu, they have these great interviews with people that I find fascinating. One of the guys is Colin Hoback. Is that right, Hoback?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Colin is a guy who started a or did a documentary called Terms and Conditions May Apply. And he went through all of these terms and conditions that do apply. All of the fine print. Most of us are exactly like the scene in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, where he says, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and begins to read Latin, and all the kids are like, "Give me the pen, I want to sign." Why not? We have nothing to lose. Right? I'm going through the Chocolate Factory anyway. I just want to go through the Chocolate Factory. I don't care what that says. I agree. Well, as you find out at the end of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, you know, if you stole fizzy lifting drinks and that was in the contract, well, can you actually fight when somebody has done something that you clicked "I agree" on? What did you actually agree to? And will that stand up in court? Because it takes you 15 hours to read that. Your Honor, this isn't reasonable. Well, you clicked on it.
And he's an amazing guy, and it's really an interesting thing because we all do it, and he's going to be coming up with us in a little bit because, I don't know, it's just an interesting thing to look at. All of us just sell our souls here, and none of us care. We can all say that we care, but none of us care. So he's going to go through all the stuff that he actually found in these documents. It's coming up in a few minutes, Glenn. And he kind of...
Is it going to be this break? Because I thought it was this break.
I think it's going to be next. Yeah, we can move on. But
next break, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, coming up, we want to talk about the Freedom Caucus. In fact, I'd like to spend a little bit of time right now talking about the Freedom Caucus. Coming against the Freedom Caucus, which Donald Trump is doing, and he continues to play these cards in tweets, blaming the Freedom Caucus for the non-passage of Trump Care is not a smart move. And even Sean Hannity last night came out and said, not smart.
Laura Ingraham, too.
That's a big deal.
Yeah. I don't think I've seen them contradict him on anything.
No.
So
what are they thinking? Well, they're thinking Steve Bannon. I don't think this is Donald Trump. This is Steve Bannon that is steering this one. Steve Bannon thinks that von Mises and limited government is all... excuse the term, mental masturbation. He believes that there's no depth to any of that. Well, I happen to think that von Mises is about as deep as you can get, and that limited government and our founding documents are about as deep as you can get. These weren't guys who, I mean, you know what? What really bothers me about all of this is here we are talking about, you know, what is the new plan for America? What is the new system for America? These guys were deep scholars, and they studied and argued about every fallen empire, every system of government they went through, and they studied. And then they made a list, all the good things, all the bad things. How did it end? All the good things, all the bad things. How did that one end? Let's look at this one. How the good things, the bad things, how did that end? Then they found and they layered them on top of each other and said, wait a minute. The good ones lasted longer because of these ideas. The bad ones failed because of these ideas. So let's make sure we include these and none of those. It wasn't just, hey, tweet 144 characters. Or even better, von Mises bad, spending good. And that's where we're at. Are you telling me, Joe, we have to spend money to make money? Well, yeah
that's what I'm telling you.
That's what I'm telling you. We've got to double the debt to be able to get out of debt. Really? That's the kind of thinking we're going for? Stimulus, good. Von Mises, shallow. Oh, okay. So he's taking on the Freedom Caucus, and Donald Trump said, we have to defeat those guys, and we have to defeat the Democrats in 2018. So the White House is now saying they're going after the Freedom Caucus and the Tea Party, which shouldn't be a surprise because that's what Donald Trump was doing before he ran for president. In 2012, that's where he was spending his money. In 2010, while we were all marching for small government, he was funding the people who stood against the Tea Party. So Bannon has a captive audience and a willing participant to go down that road to destroy the real conservatives, the constitutionalists in the House and the Senate.
Most people agree that Donald Trump is not conservative. And beyond that, he has always seemed to have some animosity toward conservatives. And that's what's coming out now with the Freedom Caucus. He doesn't like them. He doesn't want them to have influence. And I'm sure he'll fight against them in 2018. He'd love to have those guys gone.
Oh, sure. He'll stand against anybody
yeah.
who fights against him.
Yeah, it's tough because, I mean, I think, you know, you think that this is the whole point, right? I mean, you know, we used to think that conservatives got into office and try to do the most conservative thing they could get away with. And it was frustrating to conservatives because we'd say, well, why are you trying to just, you know, cut short the conservative ideal? And why not just go for it, right? Like, I mean, just go for it. And instead, what we find out is that's not their ideal at all.
No.
They never had that ideal. That was not the thing. It wasn't because they felt like they were pushed around by the media or they'd get too much heat from the press and that's so they didn't go for the real conservative thing. They never wanted it. With the exception of the Freedom Caucus.
Yes.
And now they're the targets of not only the left, which they've been forever, but now also much of the right.
What kills me is how many people said they wanted the government burned down to the ground. I just want to burn the system down. I'm so tired of these people who get in and lie. And Donald Trump's going to be able to take care of those guys. Well, why? Why do you think that? Because daddy carries a big stick. He can say things and do things that nobody else could do. He's going to get this done, and he'll burn the whole system down to the ground. Well, what you don't understand is what we talked about before. He's not burning the system down. He's going to burn the people out that were the constitutionalists, and that's what he's doing. He has co-opted the system and gotten the system to stand with him. And how did he do it? Well, all you have to do is take Mitch McConnell's wife and make her the Secretary of Transportation. Now you're going to get your support for your stimulus package. I mean, he is working the system. As we said before, he kept saying, who better to destroy the system than the guy who used the system?
The outsider.
Well, if you tell me what your pivot point was when you discovered that the system wasn't good, but the system always worked in your favor because you knew how to play it. So you're just learning how to play it again, and you're playing the system to work in your favor, not in the favor of the Constitution, but your favor.
Well, I mean, and that's what Justin Amash tweeted in response to the attack from, you know, because Trump said, hey, the Freedom Caucus, we're going to come after them in 2018. Again, this is his own party. Remember when people said that about Trump? We're going to come up with a third party candidate to go the other way. Remember how he reacted to that? This is the Republican president attacking members, elected members of his own party, saying he's going to primary them. I can't remember ever hearing a president publicly do that, though it's certainly possible. But Justin Amash responded and said, it didn't take long for the swamp to drain real Donald Trump. No shame, Mr. President. Almost everyone succumbs to the D.C. establishment. And man, it's happened fast here.
Yeah.
It's happened fast, hasn't it?
And can you imagine if this is any other Republican president saying now he's going to turn his back on the Republicans and now work with Democrats? There would be outrage from every quarter.
And that's the stuff they accused a former, like George W. Bush, for example.
Yeah.
A lot of the audience would say, hey, look at him. He's working with the Democrats. He's going across the line. He wasn't saying he was going to do it, but they were accusing him of doing it. And sometimes it was true. Here, he's just saying, yeah, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
Even Paul Ryan's like, I don't know if we want to work with the Democrats on this. Even Paul Ryan. It's uncomfortable.
You don't want to work with Democrats on health care. They're the ones that came up with this nonsense in the first place.
I mean, first of all, the health care package, and this is the craziest. Only 17% approved that thing.
Yeah.
That had only 17% approval. I mean, how do you expect to gain any support? Your policy itself, no one was for. There is no support there. And you just think you can bully your way through. And I really think, and this is why I think Ivanka, which I have a real problem. I mean, Ivanka, I'm sure she is nice. I'm sure she is smart and everything else.
Problem is she's liberal. That's the problem.
Right. Well, and also his daughter.
Well, he trusts everything she says.
I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care. We didn't elect the family.
I know.
So I don't care. However, to your point, she is very liberal.
Yeah.
And why is
and
she
everybody knows it.
Right. Why is she brought in now? Because he's moving in that direction. Mm-hmm. She's not going to help temper him with the Freedom Caucus. She's going to start tempering him and moving him in the direction of working with the Democrats.
And so is her husband. And he's got them both as close advisors.
If you want to, you want to look at this the best possible way for Trump, you could say, well, number one, he's not going to primary these people. He's not going to go after them. He's just threatening them to get in line because this is his way of negotiating. And, you know, he's going to come after them hard because he knows he can switch them. And a legitimate threat to a Freedom Caucus member is I'm going to work with the Democrats. He's not actually going to work with the Democrats. He's just saying that to, you know, manipulate the Freedom Caucus into voting his way. Mm. If you want to look at it the best possible way, maybe he's doing that and maybe it will work. Though, as we've seen, the Freedom Caucus, I mean, Justin Amash isn't going to just bend to you because you're Donald Trump.
Mm-mm.
He doesn't care. He was elected by voters himself. He was also winning elections while Trump was winning elections.
He was also primaried by the Republicans.
Yeah, and he doesn't
care.
He strikes me as a guy who, if he loses this gig, he loses this gig.
I really like him.
I do, too. And, a lot of these guys, we have Mo Brooks coming up next hour. Who is a famous economist to me, at least, a very famous economist.
We were looking at going reverting into a depression at that point. Everyone, the Fed chairman.
Well, I disagree that we were going into a depression, but go ahead.
Do you have a degree in economics?
Yes, ma'am, I do. Highest honors. Yes,
ma'am, I do. Highest honors.
The greatest clip of all time.
Yeah.
But
she would have just shut down MSNBC. That was it.
That was it, man.
Yeah, they should have just locked it. Highest honors. Not just that I have a degree.
Yeah.
Highest honors. I love that.
But he'll be coming up with us. He's in the Freedom Caucus as well. He also is the target of this. I mean, he's the target. I want to see how he reacts to it. Because these guys don't tend to be pushed around. The reason why you join the Freedom Caucus is because you're not going to be pushed around. If you're going to be pushed around, you can be any other member of the Republican Party. That's easy. That's the easy place. You can get pushed around. You can vote for anything that leadership recommends.
Also coming up, the truth of the Democratic Party. the history all this week on our serial of the Democratic Party.
It's a great party, isn't it? We're learning this week. What a wonderful party the Democratic Party is.
They're good stuff. Yeah. Good history, though.
Yeah.
Quite a history.
Now that history has been whitewashed, we'll show you the Democratic Party of today, the last episode in our series, and you can find the series at glennbeck.com/serials. glennbeck.com/serials. And tweet it out to your friends, Facebook post the link. It's all free. We want you guys to have the truth about each of these subjects. Very well researched and documented. Part four airs in just a few minutes.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Members of the Freedom Caucus are under vicious assault by the media and members of their own party, including the president, for sinking the GOP health care insurance reform plan. Rhino care, Trump care, whatever you want to call it. New study out conducted by WPA Research shows that the establishment Republicans pushing for Rhino care, not the Freedom Caucus, we're in contradiction to the desire of the base. All the voters on the right, they were upset. And this is no surprise. The Paul Ryans and the Mitch McConnell, they don't have support. You throw your lot in with those guys, you're going to end up the same way. The data shows overwhelming support for a full repeal and replace and suggests that the House Freedom Caucus did the Senate and the Republicans' hopes of expanding their Senate majority a great service. If the White House and the Republicans don't learn from this lesson, I guarantee you they will lose the Senate and possibly the House the next time around. They will lose. They're out of step with the American people. And I'm not going to cross a wall of fire, let alone the lawn, to vote for them.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
In this series, we've covered the almost inconceivable history of the Democratic Party from its inception in 1830 as a rabidly pro-slavery party through the secession of the mostly Democratic Southern states to the Civil War, Democratic Party-led Jim Crow laws and Reconstruction, all the way through one of our most racist Democratic presidents. In fact, I think one of our most racist presidents, period, Woodrow Wilson. In past series, we've discussed the horrific internment of the Japanese American citizens by another Democratic hero, FDR, and the terrible policies that he enacted that prolonged the Great Depression by 10 years and plunged us into serious debt. FDR, like Wilson before him, believed the Constitution to be inadequate, and he actually sought to change it from a charter of negative liberties, telling the government what they cannot ever do, to a charter of positive liberties, telling the government exactly what they must do. This was more along the lines of the former Soviet Union, and he called it the Second Bill of Rights. We've also featured a Democratic president, Lyndon Johnson, in the past, who, in addition to being another big fat racist, who initially opposed civil rights, he passed more egregious debt programs than all other American presidents combined, leaving us, the U.S., with unfunded liabilities today of $128 trillion. Check your watch. That number will be a lot higher in about 10 minutes. Referring to the elections of 1960 and 1964, and speaking to a black audience, Malcolm X made his feelings known about the Democratic Party.
The Democrats have been in Washington, D.C. only because of the Negro vote. They've been down there 4 years, and all other legislation they wanted to bring up, they brought it up and gotten it out of the way, and now they bring up you. And now they bring up you. You put them first, and they put you last. Because you're a chump. political chump.
So this is the real legacy of the Democratic Party. And I don't ask you to believe me. I ask you to do your own homework. Do it. Find out for yourself if what I've presented here is true. If not, drop us a note, will you? Let me know. The Democratic Party's racism is well documented. In fact, one of the Democrats' most revered senators, Robert Byrd, was a former Grand Cyclops of the Ku Klux Klan. Can't imagine thinking, yeah, I wanna. Hey, honey, guess what? I'm the Grand Cyclops. When he passed away in 2010, his fellow Democrats fell all over themselves in praise. To Hillary Clinton, for instance, he was a friend and a mentor.
Today, our country has lost a true American original, my friend and mentor, Robert C. Byrd. Senator Byrd was a man of surpassing eloquence and nobility.
To the KKK, a Grand Cyclops is indeed noble. But that praise became even more poignant and telling.
It is almost impossible to imagine the United States Senate without Robert Byrd. He was not just its longest serving member. He was its heart, its soul, and its historian.
Based on everything that you have seen in this serial, it does seem appropriate to refer to Robert Byrd, the Grand Cyclops, as the heart and soul of the Democratic Party, at least of the past. Ironically, of the former Grand Cyclops of the Ku Klux Klan, America's first black president said,
"May we all find comfort in a verse of scripture that reminds me of our dear friend. The time of my departure has come. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith." It's interesting that you've heard that passage from several speakers now, because it embodies somebody who knew how to run a good and long race, and somebody who knew how to keep the faith with his state, with his family, with his country and his Constitution.
Amazingly unreserved and profuse praise for a man with the kind of history that Robert Byrd had, especially in light of the Democrats' excoriation of Republican Senator Trent Lott just a few years earlier.
Now, years from now, when I think of the man we memorialize today, I'll remember him as he was when I came to know him. His white hair full, like a mane, his gait steadied with a cane, determined to make the most of every last breath. The distinguished gentleman from West Virginia could be found at his desk until the very end doing the people's business, delivering soul-stirring speeches, a hint of the Appalachians in his voice, stabbing the air with his finger, fiery as ever, years into his 10th decade. He was a Senate icon, he was a party leader, he was an elder statesman, and he was my friend.
Now, we all believe in forgiveness, but it seems as though when a Republican or somebody who's not a Democrat is involved, forgiveness just isn't in the cards. Let me give you the example of Trent Lott. In 2002, he spoke at a fellow senator Strom Thurmond's 100th birthday celebration, where he said, quote, "When Strom Thurmond ran for president, we voted for him, and we're proud of it. And if the rest of the country had followed our lead, we wouldn't have all these problems over the years either," end quote. Well, that's kind of a problem. Strom Thurmond ran for president in 1948. Lott was 7 years old at the time, so he couldn't actually vote for him. The "we" he described referred to his state. And no, I'm kind of actually really glad we didn't vote for Strom Thurmond. But he was 100 years old. It was his birthday party. Say something nice and move on with your life. Still, the attack on Lott from the Democrats was vicious. And maybe it was appropriate, but definitely not consistent. It was so vicious, in fact, that Lott had to resign from leadership in the Senate.
The problem for Democrats was that in 1948, during the same period Robert Byrd was the Grand Cyclops in the Klan, Strom Thurmond supported segregation. No cross-burning for Thurmond, just support in Congress for separate living space. While not right, neither was it even close to being a member, in fact, a leader in the KKK. It's also interesting and relevant to note that at the time, presidential candidate Strom Thurmond was a Democrat. Today's Democrats purport now to champion the minorities that for two centuries they persecuted and killed. But do they actually champion them? Or by pushing government assistance and continually harping about income inequality, are they actually enslaving them all over again and creating even more racial and economic discord? That's a serious conversation that Americans should have. Today's Democrats have a party that for 8 years was led by a man who was raised and mentored by communists. That isn't an insult or a slur. It's just stating a fact. And as president, Barack Obama maintained at least some of the Marxist beliefs of those around him, like redistribution of wealth.
I think when you spread the wealth around, it's good for it.
He was a man who led the nation for 8 years and believed America was just like everybody else, no worse and no better.
I believe in American exceptionalism, just as I suspect that the Brits believe in British exceptionalism and the Greeks believe in Greek exceptionalism.
That's a far cry from the days of Washington or Lincoln, even FDR, John F. Kennedy, or Ronald Reagan. The Democratic Party elites of today believe that climate change is the greatest threat we face, even greater than terrorism.
And today, there is no greater threat to our planet than climate change.
ISIS renewing its call to followers to launch attacks here in the U.S.
No challenge poses a greater threat to future generations than climate change.
He was apparently beheaded by ISIS militants.
It is indeed one of the biggest threats facing our planet today.
The two suspects' brothers with assault rifles storming that newsroom, executing editors, cartoonists.
And climate change is the threat multiplier.
In a barren desert, the mangled remains of a plane that was carrying 224
people. If another country threatened to wipe out an American town, we'd do everything in our power to protect ourselves. Climate change poses the same threat right now.
Bodies lay in the streets after multiple coordinated terrorist attacks.
And years from now, I want to be able to look our children and grandchildren in the eye and tell them that we did everything we could to protect it. Thanks, everybody.
It's a party that complained about spending under George W. Bush, then doubled America's debt in 8 years from $10 trillion in debt accumulation from George Washington to George W. Bush to $20 trillion during Obama's first two terms. And it was policies like this that made it happen.
Now people say, when I say that, people look at me and say, what are you talking about, Joe? You're telling me we got to go spend money to keep from going bankrupt? The answer, yes, I'm telling you.
It is a party that, to some, seems so obsessed with aborting babies at any stage of pregnancy, for any reason, that many in the party leadership aren't even willing to admit that their own children were human when they were inside the womb. Here's former Democratic National Chairperson Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
You have three children, correct?
I do.
What are their ages?
I have twin 16-year-olds and a 12-year-old.
And in your opinion, were they human beings before they were born?
You know, I believe that every woman has the right to make their own reproductive choices.
What did you believe about your children, though?
That I had the right to make my own reproductive choices, which I was glad to a right which I was proud to have.
So were they human beings, or yes, just yes or no?
They're human beings today, and I'm glad that I had an opportunity to make my own reproductive choices as a right that every woman has and should maintain.
But somehow or another, those who oppose Democrats are called fanatics for trying to protect human life in the womb. And the Democratic Party today is a party that recently nearly made Congressman Keith Ellison the head of the Democratic National Committee. So you know a little bit about Keith. While he was a U.S. congressman, he was also a man who had dabbled in 9/11 conspiracy theories.
He has spoken frequently at fundraisers for CARE, an organization that was an unindicted co-conspirator in the largest terror financing trial in American history. CARE is also banned as a terror group in the United Arab Emirates. Keith also, from 2009 up until the present day, has engaged with several figures who are close to the Palestinian terrorist organization Hamas. And in 2009, he met with a man described by the FBI as a fundraiser for the terrorist group Hamas. And in the end, because they wanted to make sure that everybody knew they didn't stand for those kinds of policies, rather than voting for Ellison as the DNC chair, the DNC just made him deputy chairperson. The Democratic Party today is so far to the left that John F. Kennedy wouldn't recognize it, nor have a place within it. It all comes back to its roots. Not only the roots that were planted in the early 1800s, but then again, the seeds sown by Woodrow Wilson over 100 years ago. They all have years ago borne their rotten fruit, and those progressive roots have now completely choked off and eliminated any moderate fruit that might have once existed.
Starting next week, in an exclusive serial on the Glenn Beck program, you'll learn about the most underrated president of all time, Calvin Coolidge. Listen to the entire catalog of serials anytime at glennbeck.com/serials.
Next week, beginning next Tuesday, is Calvin Coolidge, and we've been doing research on him now for a few weeks. You are going to love this guy.
You will fall in love with him.
You are just going to love this guy.
You think you like Ronald Reagan? You will love Calvin Coolidge.
Yes. Ronald Reagan, who surprisingly is Ronald Wilson Reagan,
yeah,
named after Woodrow Wilson. Uh-huh. But he was aware, grew up in the times of Coolidge, and it changed him. It cemented in his head what an American president was. And he said Coolidge was his favorite president. And Reagan, as much as you like Reagan, Reagan is a mimeograph. Now think about how smudged they smelled nice, but think how smudged those things were. He was not a Xerox copy of Coolidge. He was a mimeograph. And when you see the real document, when you see the real president and the real conservative constitutionalist, boy, oh boy, are you going to love him. Coolidge, next week.
Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BACK.
Mercury.
888-727-BACK.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
So glad you're here. We come back. We're going to talk a little bit about the Freedom Caucus and the bill that should have been proposed and passed with the guy who proposed the one-line repeal of Obamacare.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Blaze Radio on demand.
I have to tell you, their SpaceX should be, you know, the biggest story of the year, what they have accomplished. They've just now accomplished three things that nobody's ever done. One, sent a private company sending rockets up into space. Two, a private company or any company having a rocket take off and then land vertically on the launch pad. Unbelievable. They've done that now several times, one on the ground and one on water. To have it land on water with a moving platform is incredible. Yesterday, they did a third thing that you would think that the government would have done, and that is return the rocket from space, then refuel it and use it again. Never been done. We lose our rockets, they sink down to the bottom of the ocean, we never use them. We don't return them. We don't even recycle them. This one was take it off the launch pad, repaint it, refuel it, check it, and launch it again. They did that again last night. SpaceX is unbelievable. Meanwhile, what are we doing? We're talking about people who can't get anything done in Washington, and they're blaming the people who are actually standing on principles. We have one of my favorite, probably the guy who was responsible for my favorite television clip of all time, Mo Brooks, to join us right now to talk about the Freedom Caucus.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America. Welcome to the program. Let me just start with this. Representative Mo Brooks from Alabama. He was on MSNBC and they were talking about the crash of 2008 and what had happened. And the reporter who they all think they're smarter than they are said this to
me. We were looking at going reverting into a depression at that point. Everyone, the Fed chairman.
Well, I disagree that we were going into a depression, but go ahead.
Do you have a degree in economics?
Yes, ma'am, I do. Highest honors.
Okay, so
that never gets old.
Never. Welcome to the program, Congressman Mo Brooks from Alabama.
My pleasure. Every now and then, those reporters will hand you a softball.
You didn't. You handled it so well and professionally, but there had to be a part of you that just went, oh, my gosh, that feels good.
I must confess, you're right.
Yes, okay. So we wanted to talk to you because you have introduced the repeal of Obamacare in one line, which made us think this week, why aren't all bills one line? Do you have off the top of your head the one-line bill to repeal Obamacare?
Well, it's House Resolution or H.R. 1718, and it doesn't take much to say this bill, give the name of the bill, give the bill number, is hereby repealed effective December 31st, 2017. That's it.
And it, you added and anything that any laws that have been changed by this will revert back in due course or whatever.
Yeah, and we would revert back to the laws that we had in effect in 2009. And those laws, just by way of reference for everybody, those laws were the laws that gave America the best health care system in the world at much lower cost than we're now paying as a result of the federal government's expanded intrusion into the healthcare industry.
So have you talked, Mo, to anybody like Mike Lee, who is just, a constitutional mechanic? Or have you talked to the parliamentarian on why can't this bill be done? Why isn't this? I mean, this is what we promised the American people.
It can be done. It's not a matter of whether the law permits us to repeal Obamacare. The matter is whether we've got enough Republican senators with the intellect, i.e. the understanding of the issue, hopefully from a constitutional perspective or a conservative perspective. That's one requirement we have to have. And the other requirement we have to have is people who have the kind of backbone that the Democrats show on a regular basis. They fight for their principles, and they will fight to the last person to promote or defend their principles. But on the Republican side, we have a lot of congressmen and senators who are real squeamish about doing the right thing.
Okay, so let me ask you this.
Very frustrating.
Congressman, let me ask you this, because I that's what I used to believe, that they were just cowards. I don't think so. I don't think they believe the same things that we believe. I mean, how can you repeal Obamacare?
That's the intellect half of it.
Yeah, you can repeal Obamacare 60 times when you know it's not going to be signed into law. But once you have the chance with a Republican House, with a Republican Senate, with a guy who won saying I'm going to repeal, you actually don't believe in any of this stuff.
And that is a major problem. We have a lot of candidates who run as Republicans for the Senate and for the House to utter the words in a Republican primary that they are for a repeal of Obamacare. But when it comes down to actually doing it, that's where they get squeamish, or that's where their true beliefs surface, and they don't do what's necessary to fulfill their promise to the American people. And the bill that we had, we can call it Ryan Care, or you can pick up all, you know, all the different names. The American Health Care Act, I think, is the formal title to it. But the bottom line is this. Let's say I owe Glenn Beck $100, and I have promised to Glenn Beck that I'm going to pay him back tomorrow.
We have this on
and
tape
so tomorrow
now.
I arrive, and I've got my $10 bills totaling $100, and I hand that $100 to you, and then before you can get a full grasp on it, I yank nine of those $10 bills back, and I say, I've kept my promise. I gave you $100, even though I have 90 of it back in my own wallet. That's what this repeal and replace bill is all about. Claiming that we are repealing Obamacare, that's the 10%, but then keeping in place the 90% that has sent health insurance premiums through the roof, made it so unaffordable to American citizens and making it so hard for American citizens to make ends meet. We have kept almost all of the cost drivers in Obamacare that have done such great damage to the family budgets of so many Americans.
So, Congressman, were you in the meeting where Steve Bannon came in and said you have no choice but to vote for this?
I was.
How did you and other members take to that?
I thought that he was not showing the proper degree of respect to the legislative branch of government. We have three branches. We're co-equals. We've got checks and balances. And the executive branch has no right to dictate to the legislative branch what it must and must not do.
What
the executive branch does have a right to do is to try to persuade us of the merits of positions taken on public policy issues. But I was taken aback by the comments, some of those in those meetings that we've had in the White House. And the biggest negative that I perceived is the dearth of public policy reasoning for why this, I call it a Republican welfare bill, should be supported and why it's in the best interest of the American people. There was very, very little discussion about the merits of the bill and whether it was good or bad. And it is, and I'll emphasize this, the largest Republican welfare bill in the history of the Republican Party.
Wow.
And it has a lot of bad connotations to it.
I just want you to say that one more time so people can't claim they didn't hear you.
The American Health Care Act, or Ryan Care, or whatever other name you want to call it, is the largest Republican welfare bill in the history of the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. It immediately pumps in about $35 billion in tax credits, either in one shape, form, or fashion. The bulk of that is paid directly to health insurance companies that helped write the bill. And you can imagine the pressure there. There's a lot of money being spent behind the scenes to get that revenue stream of $35 billion a year from the federal treasury to the coffers of insurance companies. And you can debate the merits of that, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. But the really bad thing is that this huge welfare bill turns tens of millions of American voters into welfare dependents. People who are formerly self-sufficient, they're going to become welfare dependents because they're going to be subject to this program. And once they become welfare dependent, how do you think they're going to start voting in general elections? They used to vote Republican. They're going to start voting Democrat, and they're going to start voting socialist. And that's going to be the death knell of our country long term and the death knell of the Republican Party long term.
Congressman Mo Brooks from Alabama, the reason why I bring up Bannon is because Bannon is on record recently saying that the Freedom Caucus and all these guys like you that stood against this bill are going to be primaried by the Republicans and tried to be pushed out by the president. The president has come out with several pretty clear tweets that you are bad for the nation and the Freedom Caucus is hurting the nation and it's all your fault. How do you respond to the president's threats?
I want him, whoever him may be, to give me the most credit I can get, to give the Freedom Caucus the most credit that we collectively can get for having killed one of the worst bills that I have ever seen in my life as a public office holder. Wow. It's not just the huge welfare plan that is created that undermines the work ethic and over time is going to dramatically increase tax burdens on struggling American families. It is also that this bill would increase, and this is according to the Congressional Budget Office and the Joint Committee on Taxation, people we pay a lot of money to give us their best financial insight. Both of them say that this legislation will increase health insurance premiums over the next couple of years by about 15% to 20% over and above the increases that would have otherwise taken place under Obamacare. We were not sent to Washington, D.C. to strangle family budgets like this bill will continue to strangle them.
Talking to Republican Congressman Mo Brooks from Alabama, we've only got a couple of minutes left.
Congressman, is there any chance that this gets back on track and this is revisited and an actual conservative bill is written?
Or is he moving to the left?
I have immense faith in the power of the American people. And if the American people, each of them, will contact their Republican House members and their Republican senators and demand a clean repeal of Obamacare, it will be repealed and we will revert back to those laws in 2009 that gave us the best health care system in the world at dramatically lower cost. If there are replacement provisions that the American people want, express them to your congressman and your senator and demand that those things get done. Revisit the 2009-2010 years when folks like Glenn Beck helped inspire the creation of the Tea Party that in turn gave us a Republican House and an unseating of Nancy Pelosi in the 2010 elections.
People like Glenn Beck are now shouted down by the Republicans and the Republican media and made to be a traitor, as the Freedom Caucus understands. What people like Glenn Beck no longer want to play the game because they realize it was a damn game. And I don't believe that there's enough people out there that aren't playing a game anymore. Do you believe, and I'm not talking in Washington, the same thing is going on in the country. Do you believe there's enough people that have the intellectual honesty and integrity to stand up and say, I don't care who wins, who loses, as long as it's based on the truth?
Well, I pray you are wrong, but fear you are right. Let's always bear in mind that ultimately in a republic, the responsibility lies with the American people to elect candidates who will do the right thing in public office in the face of tremendous pressure, particularly the monetary interests and offerings of special interest groups. We face tremendous pressure to do the wrong thing. And we need those of us who, again, have the backbone and have the intellect to know what the right thing is and then to do it, and the right thing being what is in the best interest of America, always bearing in mind that it was over two centuries of our ancestors that helped make America the greatest nation in world history, and we have a duty to honor their sacrifice, and we also have a duty to leave to the next generation, our kids and grandkids, an America that is better than what we inherited.
Well, what is...
And this generation may be the first generation that is derelict in that duty, and that is disconcerting.
Well, what is the behind the scenes like with you guys? You know, the people who are standing up. Are you secretly scared out of your mind? Are you secretly high-fiving each other, saying, good job? Or are you just, you know, walking the walk?
Glenn, there is a mixture of emotional and intellectual reactions. You've got some people who are concerned by the threats emanating from the White House or from the insurance industry or from the House leadership. You've got others who have been through this before. Folks like myself, I've been through this before. I know that there's a life after an election, whether you win or lose. I also know that there are other major issues that are going to be coming down the pike that we're going to have to deal with. And this is just one of them. So I'm trying to take an even keel.
I need about
others I'm concerned about.
I need about a 20-second answer. Any idea what happened to people like Ted Poe?
No. Inexplicable to me.
Sad.
Even shorter than a 20-second answer. That was impressive.
Congressman Mo Brooks from Alabama, you're on the good guy list. Keep
Thanks for what you're doing. Remain strong.
Thank you for what you're doing. There are millions of people that are supporting you, even if our voices are a little more quiet because we just don't believe in all the people around you. But we are supporting you and the people like you. Thank you so much, Mo.
Well, thank you, Glenn. And we can't be successful without people like you helping the public to better understand what's really going on.
Thank you so
much. Sharing the truth, the light of day, will succeed. The American people are educated.
Congressman Mo Brooks, who is now in the fight with his own party to do the right thing.
Glenn Beck.
The fusion of entertainment. And enlightenment.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Sign up for the newsletter and get all the info you need to know at glennbeck.com.
A large Pacific, what do you call hurricanes in the Pacific? Typhoon. Large typhoon that happened in Australia. They're now calling it real life Sharknado. Because how big was the shark they found?
It was a good size killer shark. It was in a puddle. It's inland. They don't know if there's going to be more. It's possible. I just don't know.
I saw the picture. Was it alive? Did it live through that?
If you have to ask that.
Yeah. Well, it may have been alive when it swallowed the man with a chainsaw on the way down. fought his way out.
Al Gore was right. Yeah. He said this stuff was going to happen, and it is.
Yeah, it's raining sharks. It's raining sharks.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program. Oh, so much going on this weekend. Anything fun happening this weekend? Anybody have anything fun planned? Anything?
I do not.
Fun?
Well, today is National Crayon Day. I plan on celebrating by coloring. So I'm just going to do that all weekend.
Yeah, that's great, Jeff.
that's great.
A little whatever.
Are you going to be, you think you're going to be supporting the new statue of Paul Walker? The 12-foot statue of Paul Walker from Fast and Furious?
No, I don't. I didn't.
That could be something that maybe you could get behind. That's a real
cause.
Behind
it, right?
You know, instead of just looking
there
for fun.
There was a guy who was dedicated enough to show up at a city council meeting and bring it up.
And what up, council? My name is Chad Kroger. First, I just want to say I'm truly honored to be here. To be in a city where you can have a surf session and then go to a city council meeting within the span of an hour, I think that just shows that the American dream is still very much alive. So thank you.
Amen.
Surfing in city council meetings, that's what it's all about. Mm-hmm. That's why all these immigrants are coming
here. Sure, sure, sure.
All right, to the serious stuff. I stand before you here today in the midst of gnarly times. I'm a freelance journalist, and after interviewing hundreds of people, I've witnessed firsthand the ever-growing divide between Americans and families torn apart over political differences. Mm-hmm. Mm. It's in times like these we need a unifying figure we can all turn to. Mm-hmm. A beacon of headlights that can guide us down the dusty road.
Stop.
Detroit has the RoboCop. Philly has Rocky.
Yep.
We need Paul Walker.
Mm-hmm.
That is why I'm proposing that the city erect a 12-foot tall steel statue of Paul Walker on the pier. And I'm also proposing that it be sculpted by none other than Damian Ortega, best known for his installation of White Cube 2003.
Oh, I loved White Cube.
The new Fast and the Furious is fast approaching. It comes out next month, and so we don't have much time. So I'm just going to ask you guys straight up.
Straight
how
up.
How can we get started? When can we break ground?
What was the response?
Right. Listen.
Do you have any comments?
All right, I'll let you guys think about that, but thank you so much.
You stunned them into silence.
That's so solid clip. I guess it's some comedian who went up and did it, but it's the real city council. And then they used their faces, and their reaction is pretty solid.
Yeah, they couldn't give them a time when they were going to break ground.
Well, the time is, I don't know, 10 years ago?
Right.
That's the right
no
time.
Kidding.
That's the right answer.
Yes.
We must have this statue.
You know, may I just say something? I am you know, oftentimes described as somebody who just tries to make people afraid. And that way I can play on your fears.
Sure.
I want you to know that
he played on our fears.
That is not true, but I do want to share a story that I have from the Virginian Pilot. Headline: spiders could theoretically eat every human on Earth one year.
This is a frightening story.
In one year.
It's a frightening story.
Spiders are quite literally all around us. Mm-hmm. You know it, and I know it. The recent survey of North Carolina homes turned up spiders in 100% of homes. Oh boy, including 68% of bathrooms and more than 3/4 of bedrooms. There is a good chance at least one spider is staring at you right now, sizing you up from a darkened corner in the room, 8 eyes glistening in the shadows.
You don't need 8 eyes. That's too many eyes. I just want to make sure that the people know that that's clear.
Now, yeah, the story goes on.
Too many.
So you know, spiders mostly eat insects.
Mostly.
Although some of the larger species have been known to snack on lizards, birds, and even small mammals. Given their abundance and the voraciousness of their appetites, two European biologists recently wondered, if you were to tally up all of the food eaten by the world's entire spider population in a single year, how much meat would it be? Martin Neifler and Klaus Berkhofer, who I believe are made-up people, published their...
It's a strong stance.
Oh, that is a strong stance.
I don't have anything to back it up, but those are stupid names, and I think they were made up. They published their estimate in the Journal of Science of Nature earlier this month, and the number they arrived at is frankly shocking. The world's spiders consume somewhere between 400 million and 800 million tons of prey.
That's a lot of spiders.
That means spiders eat at least as much meat as all 7 billion humans on the planet combined.
Ugh. They said there's 29 million tons of spiders on the Earth. 29 million, not pounds, tons.
Okay. But here's the thing. They're not all in one place. Because if they were all in one place, I would say don't go there.
Yeah.
But right, they're spread out, so it's not so bad.
Well, so you're saying we shouldn't...
Right.
I mean, if they all start to congregate...
Then we'll worry.
I don't know. It's kind of icky anyway, because you don't know where they're at. Just everywhere.
Yeah, see, that's the problem. They're 8 eyes. They're all watching us. And when they start to congregate, you won't notice until it's too late. And then they'll just start picking us off one by one because we are all spread out too thin. We need to get behind. We need to build a wall, a spider wall.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For slightly more...
How would a spider get over a wall? There's no way.
There's no way.
I mean, what, he's going to climb up the side?
Right.
It's too,
yeah.
Oh,
what, are they like sticky feet or something?
Right, yes. That's the sort of ridiculous.
Dig a hole underneath? No.
No.
For slightly more disturbing comparison, like you needed a more disturbing comparison than what they've already given you.
Yeah. There's a lot of that. It's pretty disturbing, I would say.
The total biomass of all adult humans on Earth is estimated to be 287 million tons. Remember, spiders eat 400 to 800 million tons of prey. Hello.
We should kill all spiders. I think that's the next step. That snakes as well. Spiders and snakes, kill them.
Did you hear about the snake that they found?
Yeah.
What was it? At
python with a person in it?
Yeah.
They cut it open, and there was a full person inside of it.
He was okay. He was fine.
No, I don't think he was.
Oh, he wasn't?
No.
Was he like one of the little people?
Well, no,
no,
he was a pretty big person.
Human being.
Remember they did that thing, that special on TV? They're like, we're going to go inside of a snake! And then it was like kind of, it didn't really happen.
That was a letdown. was a letdown.
The reason why it didn't happen is because when you go inside a snake, you're usually dead.
Mm-hmm.
That's why. So you try not to be dead.
Well,
as
I also
being.
Don't think a snake just eats you like...
No, the guy had to have been dead prior to the snake eating him, right?
Right.
I think so, yeah. Although I don't know that. I didn't. See, these are disturbing stories about science.
I mean,
I don't
know if the snake killed him, but if the snake didn't kill him, I mean, the snake's just doing what snakes do.
Can I give you something a little bit nicer about humans, the world around us?
Hang on just a second. By the way, I think we have to come up with a new kind of name for any snake that has a full human inside of it. Yes. That goes beyond, oh, eek, snake. That is that's something different.
Dinosaur, basically.
Yeah, that's something different.
Yes, it is. Let me give you this. The Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Mm-hmm.
We all know it. Fearsome carnivore, which stood 20 feet tall, ripped its prey to shreds with dagger-like teeth,
mm-hmm.
had a snout as sensitive to touch as human fingertips, say scientists.
Yeah, they're sensitive lovers.
Yes, apparently. That is the headline legitimately is Tyrannosaurus Rex was a sensitive lover, new dinosaur discovery suggests.
Okay. What is that?
What did they discover? Did they discover giant Barry White records someplace? What did they...
The snout.
They nuzzle with their snout.
They nuzzle with their snout.
Stop.
It's very tender.
Stop.
Very tender Tyrannosaurus love.
Stop.
What?
Do you realize that every Jurassic Park movie, everything we know about dinosaurs, when it comes to the way they look, is wrong? Do you know that they found now evidence that they were indeed covered by feathers?
What?
Well, they were kind of like birds, but he said that in Jurassic Park, right?
Yeah, no, they were covered by feathers. There's new evidence just found in the last 6 or 8 months. New evidence shows they were actually covered by feathers. And so...
it wasn't all of them, though, was it?
I think it was.
Okay.
There was... look it up. I remember we talked about it at one point that we have this all wrong. We have this all wrong.
We had a scientific consensus, so no, we didn't. there's no such thing. What are you, opposing a scientific consensus?
If we didn't
here?
Know that they had feathers, how do we know that they were, lighting some candles and snuggling?
Well,
seriously, did we find a night vision videotape?
No. What they found is the snout.
I'd be happy to create
both of
one.
Them without their feathers. They had taken their feathers off, so they were completely butt naked. One of them was a supermodel.
I want to create a Tyrannosaurus Rex film.
They probably had them when they're young, but not when they were adults, is what they believe.
Feathers?
The young T-Rex probably had a thin coat of downy feathers. An adult would not have needed them to stay warm.
Mm-hmm.
However, they didn't need it to stay warm, Pat, because they were constantly hooking
snuggling.
Up.
Right.
They were the sluts of the dinosaur
lovers.
World.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They were
right.
constant. Why did
no,
they have?
No, they wouldn't be sluts if they were sensitive.
No, they had. That's why they had success in mating. Because they look, as Jeffy will tell you, I mean, you can say a lot of things to get the deed done. It doesn't mean you're necessarily sensitive.
Absolutely.
But they rub their
tinder all over the world.
Seriously,
stuff, man.
Imagine Jeffy naked right now.
No,
with shorter arms than he has, and try to tell me he doesn't look like a Tyrannosaurus Rex was walking towards the bed.
You put feathers on me. We're talking some business now.
Right.
they would rub each other's faces as a prehistoric form of foreplay, scientists believe, which is good. Also, we got this in, I think, from a scientist. I'm pretty sure the organization that calculated the combined human mass didn't factor in Jeffy. So I don't know.
Oh, well, we could just come.
That didn't come from a scientist. I got that note earlier from NASA.
Oh, from NASA. Oh,
yeah, good. They said they would have that number by the end of the show.
And just one more note. Mm-hmm. Jeffrey Immelt from GE. Says that we should not fear the robots. We got this battle of these battle of the tech people between Elon Musk, who says we should, and Jeffrey Immelt, who says we shouldn't. They're not going to take your jobs, he said. It's all overblown. They're making America richer.
Won't kill human jobs. That's what he said.
Mm-hmm.
So who you
know, Jeffrey?
Who are you going to believe?
Sorry. What do you
mean
they're not
going to get? I don't know. I think there's other. Look, I think there are changes at times that we don't predict. I think there's other ways that jobs change. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion.
Wait. I'm not saying new jobs aren't going to be created. I'm saying what? So the self-driving car is not going to put out of business without government interference. Taxi cabs, Uber drivers. It's not going to change the way you buy cars. You'll just basically lease them because it'll be an Uber. You'll just make a I want it to be here, or I'm going to lease my car out to be in Uber.
It will, but there'll be jobs to replace that in some other sector.
That's right. Different. Right? That's not what he's saying. He's saying don't fear, at least the way you read it, don't fear the robots. They will not take your job. That's not true. They will take your job. You may have another job.
Yeah, there's other.
But it will destroy most jobs.
We know, we've done this stat before. I don't have it in front of me, but it was something like, you know, around our founding, it was like 95% of people worked on farms, and now it's like 5%.
Correct.
I mean, so those jobs did go away. That wasn't necessarily a horrific thing. It was a good thing.
No, it was good. Look at farmers. You know? Look at farmers.
Yeah.
There's so much now that you can do with automated farms.
Yeah, it was a good
automatically
thing.
Take care of those things. That's great.
And those are harder jobs.
Yes.
Those jobs were backbreaking at that time.
Correct.
But I mean, the other thing that we don't talk about too is the amount of hours. For work hours, in 1880, the average person spent 182,000 hours working. By 1995, that was down to 122,000. By 2040, they believe it'll be 75,000. So you will, part of this, and your leisure hours went from 43,000 in 1880 to 176,000 in 1995, and they believe it will be 246,000 by 2040. So that you will have much more leisure, much more discretionary hours, which are up to over 300,000, and only 75,000 hours working. And that ratio, by the way, you're talking discretionary and leisure hours that are, 6 to 1
how
over
much
your
is
work.
That?
Wouldn't
how,
that be an
how much is that
world?
A week? Do the figure on that and come back.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So the stat we're looking for here, broken down by week. In 1880, people worked 60 hours a week. 1995, 33 hours a week. By 2040, they believe it will be 20 hours a week. For leisure time, it was 12 hours a week in 1880. 1995, it was up to 40 hours a week of leisure. Mm-hmm. They believe it's going to be 57 hours of leisure per week by 2040. And this is an older estimate. I mean, I think technical advancements have happened even faster than projected.
Thus the point.
Don't fear the robots.
Yes! Is that what that song was about?
We can just turn them off. Don't fear
the
robots.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.